Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Based on Kansas's success with the Medicaid-sponsored program, which was durable medical equipment, KRS, our VR program, contacted us and said that they were going to change their service delivery system for folks with low vision or blindness. And interestingly, as a tech project, they've worked with us quite frequently, but we've had quite a few farmers and ranchers who have had low vision that we have worked with, and they are continuing to be active in their in some aspect of production agriculture. Maybe that they are maintaining equipment, and we're looking at color contrast mats. In fact, we did a presentation on this, I think, 4 or 5 years ago at an agribility conference. So we look at like color contrast mats. We look at look contrast so they can see changes in floor surfaces. With the new GPS systems in tractors, we've had real good luck with farmers continuing to be able to stay active because low vision does not necessarily mean you can't drive. They may not be bringing grain into town or to the elevator, or but it's possible that they are working on their property. So it's a little bit different, and we've had some pretty good luck in this area, in the area of low vision. And then, of course, when you get to the point where it's so significant that an individual is legally blind, then we're looking at the situation where sometimes we're just helping them continuing to financially manage their farm, and they're using hired help or else other family members. So that's kind of where the ag tie-in is there. But KRS said that they wanted to go from a center-based program to more of a community-based services, and they had 4 center-based programs located around the state. So if you had a sudden change in vision acuity, you would have to go to one of those centers for a lot of intensive training. And people were just really resisting that service delivery style. So KRS anticipated it needed to change, needed to go community-based and get the services in people's homes or at work sites, those types of things. They had a lot of equipment. It was over $250,000 worth of equipment, and that varied from closed-circuit television, CCTVs, video magnifiers, a lot of aids for daily living in the area of personal care, cooking, financial management. There's some software. So it was quite a variety of devices. And they asked us if, first of all, could we track the inventory, and we assured them we could. And we track all the equipment that in our reuse program in a database. It's the same database we use to monitor our customers' goals and things like that. So this way, if a customer is given a piece of equipment, it's matched to their record. So I could tell you, like a farmer in western Kansas out in Ness City has the following pieces of equipment. It's right there in his record, and I know everything about that equipment. So they like the fact we could track it. They like the fact that we had good relationships with people throughout the state, and that statewideness. And that's where, you know, we've really, really pushed the fact that, you know, this is a rural program. We get out and we meet people where they live, whether it's small towns or if it's on a farm or a ranch. And so they donated the equipment to us and then gave us some dollars for refurbishing and very little money for training. It's kind of, you just have to believe that it needs to be done. If it is a work situation, then we do get service authorizations from VR to teach the people how to use it. So, for example, we had a farmer who received quite a bit of equipment, and Jeannie Sharp got 2 service authorizations, so made about $3,500 teaching this guy how to read feed bills and things like that, and how to scan things in and track his information. So in the first year, and basically our eligibility criteria, one thing, we're not interested in a program if it's really restrictive, and they were very, very helpful with us. You had to, you could have an income of up to $55,000 and still receive equipment. If you earned more than $55,000, if it was for employment reasons, you were still eligible. You did have to be a Kansan, of course. And the priority was working age 18 and up. We had to stretch them because they were a little resistant. They didn't want to give some of the equipment to folks in their 70s and 80s. And, of course, that hit some of our farmers and ranchers because every farm and ranch in Kansas has a 20-something farmer, a 50-something farmer, and a 70-something farmer. And I know it's got to be the same in your states, too. So that we got them to ignore the age restrictions. I mean, because when do you no longer care about whether or not you can see? So they were real generous with that. So in the first year, we distributed 70 CCTVs, 19 video magnifiers, and 110 low vision aids for daily living. And I've been throwing that. Does everybody know, for example, a video magnifier that can be a very portable item that you could, you know, take out to the workshop with you? It could also be something that is a flexible camera that stands alone and you hook it up to a large monitor. We've got a guy who works on some of his equipment, and he uses his camera. And he's basically working on his equipment, but actually looking up at the TV monitor because so it's sort of like, have you ever watched surgeons on TV when they're doing really fine work? They're actually watching monitors rather than looking at what their hands are doing. So they're watching what their hands are doing on a screen because it's so much bigger. It's magnified. So we've got some guys who are working on equipment that way.
So how's the camera? How do you arrange the camera?
It depends upon what they're working on. We do a lot of clamps and things like that. But the camera is just connected usually with USB cables, and we've got one guy who's got a USB cable that's like 16 foot long. It can be clamped off on another area in the engine. It's kind of like the same way you would position a light if you were trying to get better vision on the task at hand. So that's about where you're putting your camera.
So are you just using a large screen LCD then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, we picked up startlingly. KRS had quite a few flat screen televisions that they gave us, so that was sort of convenient. But then we found that, you know, Target, Walmart, all those lovely places, because high def TVs are getting so cheap, the smaller ones. You know, a 22 inch TV is pretty easy to come by. Computer monitors can be easy to come by. So we're sometimes cannibalizing computers. The CPU no longer works, but the monitor's good, so we've given those to farmers too.
Hmm.
You can do it free, we'll do it that way.
Sounds good.
So, and I know I talk exceedingly fast because I always hate doing these things. So, let's see. The other thing we started to talk to VR about was the fact that they have quite a bit of equipment that they purchase and they place with individuals as they're seeking employment. Sometimes that equipment comes back, and in the state of Kansas, so it might be intriguing for you to find out what your VR program in your state does with that equipment when it comes back. Ours is going into the field offices where their counselor was located, but in the budget cutbacks we're facing right now, we're downsizing numbers of offices, and we're starting to find batches of equipment. So we're working with VR about possibly being able to track that inventory for them. This way, when the equipment comes back, you know, quite honestly, we're the first ones to know what it is, and we can start looking around and see, are we working with a farmer or a rancher who could use it? Do we have another VR customer who could use it, who's not in an agribusiness or an ag production role? Or just sending an email out to all of the VR counselors, hey, this is available. Is there somebody on your caseload? And we aren't offering to do that at no cost, but we're offering to do it at a real reasonable cost because we recognize it really extends an effective use of state dollars. So So we're sort of playing with that. So if you have never checked to see what happens to your equipment, a few states actually just let people keep it. Kansas doesn't feel that way. If you're not working, they'd like their equipment back.
What kind of equipment are you talking about there?
We have gotten back, we found in offices, we found two power chairs that were less than a year old. Yeah. We found probably a dozen computers, some of them that had been badly treated, so we'll lose some of those. We found an adult standard that we immediately could match up to another guy, and it's a guy in an agribusiness who's going to be using it, and it just expands his ability to work longer because he can change positions. So it's sort of interesting. And then we had a ridiculous number of car mechanic tools. The guy had a prosthesis, and so I don't know where we're gonna. In fact, one of the things we asked is, can we shop around? You know, can we talk to Oklahoma, Nebraska, Missouri, Colorado? And Kansas said definitely not. So I don't know if other states would be more flexible because, you know, I would point out that some of this stuff, you don't want to let it sit for very long. I mean, a computer is valuable while it's young. It's not valuable, you know, if it's waiting longer. And if it's a special needs computer, then it makes sense to look out and, you know, even, good Lord, even sell it to another VR program at a reduced rate. They're not that flexible yet, but we will persist.
How many pieces of equipment are we talking about inventorying here on, say, an annual basis?
In our reuse program, now, remember, our durable medical reuse program is big. It's real big. We reassign almost 700 pieces of equipment every year.
Mm.
So that's a lot of equipment. Now, on the vision side, we were looking at 300 pieces. On the VR side, it's too soon to know. And I've looked at some of their data with them to see, like, what types of equipment and the volume that they've purchased. It's a little hard because of the way some counselors write up their service authorizations. It's not always really clean to know how much equipment was purchased. But I would say that, you know, you're looking at, in the course of a year with VR in Kansas, we're probably looking at 450, 500 pieces of equipment. We wouldn't be tracking all of that. We're just interested in the stuff. Now, we could enter a record that it's out there, and if they would hire us to do that, that would be awesome, and we do that pretty inexpensively because it's not hard to enter a record. That takes a minute, 2 minutes.
So how are you making the record? Are you making it record public, like on a website or something, or how are you managing your information?
If we're tracking information, we don't make that one public, but once it becomes available, it comes back in, and we don't have anybody in the system it's right for, then on the ATK website, there's a list that says available durable medical equipment, and anybody can take a look and see what that is. And then also on that list is the available low vision devices. So if VR asked us to do it, I would imagine, and there's links on the Agribility website to those also. If VR was wanting us to do it, I would imagine they wouldn't want it to be a public list. So at that point, what we do is we would have a web page where you'd have to sign in. So it you know, think extranet. And so then a VR counselor could sign in and see what was available. And we do that kind of stuff with our own staff because we have some equipment that's not available for everybody's use. Our short-term loan or our demo equipment. Anything else?
The reason that I was asking that is that I've been gone too long now, but when I was in Nebraska, we had a person with a prosthesis that needed some tools to go on the end of it. Matter of fact, he was on the picture of one of the national pieces, And I don't know how he found all those tools, but my understanding was is that somebody had a list,
mm-hmm.
and there was a box of tools that he could get readily, you know, done. And so the need there is matching up the person and et cetera. The other question I might have is, suppose that somebody was interested in a piece of equipment and seeing how it's being used. Do you have too many things to overcome to get that kind of information out? Does VR have something within their system that says there's a compatible piece of equipment and the user's over here, let the person go take a look at it or something like that, or talk to the person to see how successful it was?
In Kansas, they the VR counselors, and I'm on their listserv, it's for VR counselors, and then it's also for certain service providers.
Mm-hmm.
And they shoot that around. Does anybody have an individual who's using, you know, an iGaze system, or anybody
sure.
have somebody who's, you know, lower extremity amputee in this type of situation? And they get good responses that way. If you understand how to use the KMIS, so the Kansas Management Information System database, you can actually find all the equipment in the state, but it's a little bit harder. Anything that AgriBility or ATK tracks in Kansas, we have the ability, if someone called and said, I'm interested in, you know, talking to somebody who's using something like this, we go in and we see who in the state is using it, and then talk to the staff who work with that individual and see if they're interested in talking
okay.
to the individual or showing them.
So you do have some kind of process that somebody
uh-huh.
could
yes.
utilize. It seems like, you know, the audiovisual, the hearing items, you know, our university community colleges and so forth have a huge assortment of items, computers, you know, enlargement of computers, all the software. So a lot of, you know, you can get a lot of help through the community colleges and universities. But outside of that, when you start talking about special AT for working and so forth, then it gets pretty sparse.
Yeah, yeah. And Kansas AgriBility, we're a service provider for, we are one of their AT providers. There's a service agreement. And so both ATK and Kansas AgriBility have signed that service provider packet. And so we're certified to provide those services, which is why we have more flexibility and why we have access to some information that other providers probably don't have within the state.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Does anybody else's? I know there are other states that do reuse. Are anybody on? Are you guys reusing equipment of any kind with anybody in particular?
We've been our Tech Act project has a reuse program. It just changed locations a couple 3 years ago, so they're in the process of getting it
mm-hmm.
going and getting the equipment in. A lot of that is durable medical and computers. I think we're going to look at getting some of our ag stuff listed on there also. Talking about the equipment VR gets back, is that from cases that are not closed successfully, or, you know, what kind of situation does that happen?
Yeah, it can be, it's usually one of three reasons. The person is continuing to be a VR customer, but they've changed their employment plan, so that's no longer appropriate equipment, so it comes back in. It's someone who decided they didn't want to work, and sometimes, you know, that's less than positive at times, because sometimes it's a piece of equipment that would still be of benefit to them, but, you know, VR is not going to go in and take a power chair from somebody, but they will go in and take back computers and specialized software, some of those types of things, tools, if you're not following your employment plan. And then in the case of the two power chairs that did come in, the one person I knew the individual and had a progressive disease that really accelerated, and so both of those individuals died. I don't have any background on the other individual, but I understand what happened in the first case. So those are the three most common reasons.
Well, I know with especially the business plans, I've been involved in, it's understood that if the business is not closed successfully as profitable and sustainable, then the equipment provided. Now, I have not been counselor talking about getting any of that back. Well, I have to do some investigating there, but that's...
Yeah. And I wouldn't want to have to be in the situation of having to be the person to bring it back in.
Yeah.
But I do understand why counselors feel it's necessary at times. I know we've got a few counselors who have never brought back anything. They just choose. It's not something they want to do, but most of them do.
Any other question for Sheila? Very good, then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Sheila.
Have a good day.
Bobby?
Yes?
We had talked before, and I know I'm catching you off guard.
Right before classes start, too. Yeah.
Go through the process that you explained to me on senior design projects.
Okay, remind me again a little bit about what you're...
Well,
how we set those up, or...
How you set them up, how are they selected?
Well, and I'm not teaching senior design this year because of going on sabbatical, but... our process, and I'm not sure that everybody follows something sequence, but basically, you still with me?
Yeah.
Basically, the way we do it is we solicit projects, and I think that's the same way other states like Kansas and Nebraska and also Pennsylvania, at least those are the projects I've seen with AgriBility projects. The way our process, and we actually have two things that we have submitted the last couple years, and I didn't do it this year because I knew I'd be out of town. We submitted some to the mechanical engineering department, and with the objective that, hey, we would like to have something with this criteria. In the last couple years, I have specified the tractor type and size, and then also the criterion is that you only have a certain amount of money that you can spend to get a lift going.
Right.
And so what we try to do, and the purpose of that is get as specific as you can for the project. The one thing that I have probably not worked on as hard as I could is that because these are typically 9-month type projects, I've always hated to have an individual case, you know, a specific case, just because of the length of time of getting it done. I would probably change my mind if we had one team that kind of got it started and the next team would be like an implementation and fine-tuning of that design for a very specific person. But typically you have to kind of keep that in mind. The other thing that, that I try to keep people thinking about is that, you have to use off-the-shelf components. There may be some machining, but that shouldn't be the main portion of the cost of the device. And that's pretty much it. How they get selected is if a student group wants to work on that. The only requirement in mechanical engineering is they had to have 3 students, since it's all team projects. And so, if you can get 3 people agreeing to work on that, it flies.
Okay.
And then you have, as you're the kind of like, I forget what they call it, but kind of like the project advisor, you're required to do some grading. You're required to do some evaluation and meeting with the team on a periodic basis, which typically is 1 hour a week is what
okay.
we typically look at. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Was there anything kind of specific? I mean, that's the way when we do it, we try to do that. And did I send you the links of the one that we submitted?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And what that was is basically a marketing, I call it a marketing link, where we try to solicit students to go get more information about it and get them thinking about would this be a project they want to work on. But, you know, when you take a look at Virginia Tech, we have the largest capstone experience in mechanical engineering. So there's over 65 projects in there and over 400 students. And so, when I think about BSE, we only have about 7 or 8, 25 students. And typically, I've not been able to get any from our students to even start to look at it. So, and it's just because we don't have a power machinery emphasis anymore.
Well, and that's I guess my thought process was, okay, how do we get that interest generated that they will select one of our projects?
Well, one of the things that I pushed last year, and even though I did, it wasn't all that successful, there is a senior design, did you drop off, Steve?
I'm still here.
Okay. There's a group, and I forget the name of it, but it's primarily for senior designs. It's primarily, and they give like $1,000 in it. It's a competition on a national level.
Okay.
And I think if you just type in something like team senior design and disability, you'll come up with it. But it's a national program. And your students then have to go to, I think it's Washington, for a competition. They've got a series of things that have been done in the past. And so whenever I've couched the project, I've always said this is part of the requirement to submit your items for this competition and see if you can get anywhere. So we're starting to kind of change our frame of reference a little bit with our senior design, where we might start requiring everybody to at least submit it to a national competition and go through some format. So
okay.
Just to start, well, for one reason, make sure that at least they get to the national meeting as a minimum, and then some of these, like pollution prevention, there's about 4 or 5 of them now that are put together that, you know, they emulate the quarter scale, they emulate the Baja and all those kind of things, but they're for different purposes. And so the disability one is the one I've always wanted to have something in, but never have got that far yet.
Okay.
Wish I could remember what the name of it is, but what I did is I just received the packet in the mail this week, and I stuck it in the guy that's teaching the senior design. Let me see if I can find it real quick on the internet.
Okay.
I've always been interested in it, and just haven't just got in there and got it done.
Not enough hours in the day.
Well, I'm kind of glad in one respect, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
No use. Let's see, senior design project.
I think we have different projects here in our department, and we throwing a couple, 3 things out there, but nobody seems to have grabbed hold of them. And, I didn't know how early it started. And
Well, it depends on the group. And for our group here, the mechanical engineering starts soliciting ideas like in pretty close to 1st of March. And then when you sign up for a class as a student, you're supposed to sign up for that particular project, so you know what you're going to be doing coming in fall semester. In our particular department, the process has been, you know, we could do it right up to the first day of class, but then after that we're pretty much heading off and doing that. So
okay.
I'm not coming up with it. I think that I had that website in there for you when you last did that, but I don't see it. It's administered through some university. In other words, they probably got the money, but it's a pretty neat nationwide project that they're administering through. And what I really appreciated was that they gave, you know, they gave the award winners and had a little video and et cetera of their award winners. And some of the items that were built were pretty slick. I mean, I remember seeing one that was focused more on how to remove a bottle cap and those kind of things, and with no arms needed, and it was pretty slick.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
If I come across it, I'll send you the link to it. But I thought it would be real simple to put in something like capstone design disability, but it's not coming up there. But I just received the packet. I just received the packet this week in the mail, and then you can go register online with some of the items. Let me see if this is it. No. I don't see it right off. I'll have to do a little bit of finagling here, but I don't see it.
Go back to your email, previous email where we talked about it before, too.
Yeah, I think I put it in there because it had at least some dollars to go along with it. And so, but, you know, those are the kind of things I was kind of thinking about was, you know, if I had a case that, like, you know, getting a lift on a small tractor was the one I'm, you know, it seems like we're always dealing with in some case.
Right.
And the commercial units are always too expensive when you compare it to the cost of the tractor. And so I was trying to come up with something that would be fairly quick. And actually, the one year I probably overdid it because what I had submitted was the criterion. It had to be human-powered. It couldn't be... it couldn't be any mechanical. Well,
right.
It could have a mechanical advantage, but it couldn't have anything powered with it. So,
right.
Which I still think would be a neat idea. I think some of these creative mechanical engineers should be able to come up with that. And maybe, you know, in the future we need to couch it a little bit different where we're looking at, you know, lifts within used vehicles or rental cars or things like that that's
right.
Easily portable and still doesn't need a lot of mechanical energy.
Right.
I hope that helps you get going anyway. And
well, we'll
keep working on it.
I think we're going to try to get something going this fall.
Good.
I don't think our seniors have selected their projects yet.
Well,
I think we've a month or so to do that.
Well, I've noticed that a lot of people are like us trying to get students engaged, you know, in the spring semester. And that being the case that, you know, you got to start planning way early compared to what we usually do and then kind of wait during the summer. That's the one reason that the doing it for a specific client hasn't worked for us.
Right.
You know, when you start thinking about it, it's not – now it becomes almost a year process before you even get anything that you can show a client. So.
All right.
Alrighty.
Very good. I appreciate the information.
All right, no problem. You have a good day. Thanks for the phone call. This was beneficial. I think I got to get with Kurt and understand how we do things. You know, the Easter Seals and et cetera have all these depositories, but we don't communicate it very well amongst our groups. So.
Well, I think that's why it jumped out to me. And we've had some work with our Tech Act group here in the state, but we haven't used it for any agricultural stuff.
Yeah,
and I think we forget about, we're worried about getting them on the tractor.
Right.
Forget about getting them in the house and
Getting them comfortable in the house, yeah.
And that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Where some of these other can.
All right, you have a good day. I'm going to see if I can clean up some of my office here before the students just completely wipe me out.
Oh, thank you much, Bobby.
All righty. Bye.
Anybody else have any questions or comments? Are you still there?
Yeah,
sound like sound like Kurt's there.
Oh, it was Dan from Minnesota.
Steven, okay.
We're working with the University of Minnesota on a project with an engineer came out and looked at a lift a farmer had built on his tractor that's really not the safest thing in the world. So Steve's going to bring it back to their class this spring, starting now the design class at the University of Minnesota and see what they can come up with. But time really is an issue when you're working on an individual person's project. The other things that we're working with the farmer on through agribility, we're going to have to complete and get that end of the thing rolling now. And I'm not sure, I don't feel good about even him on that lift the way it is now, but he's used it for 10 years or whatever, but it's not good. But time really does become an issue from the time that they first look at it till the time that anything would really happen. You are looking at close to a year.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Well, students don't get concerned about any time frame on it.
No.
And I know around here, you know, they might get started, but when it's time to leave in the spring, all the pieces are left scattered about back here in our shop, and it's where you can't walk through the shop.
Yeah,
we had that.
In fact, I think we got one or two that stayed over the summer trying to finish their project, and I'm not sure they're done yet.
But the reuse certainly is a big issue. It certainly be, I know in Minnesota we certainly like to see a little bit better reuse program going. Like the Goodwill Easter Seals, they certainly have their equipment lockers where people can go get some of the stuff and use it. But other than that, the State Tech Act does have a small reuse on their website to get the word out. But to get some sort of an idea where everything's at would be great, especially the agricultural stuff.
Right.
You always got people looking for used lifts. You got people, unfortunately, most of the lifts just go right back on another tractor, but
yeah.
There's not a whole lot of that used sitting around, but I've had a farmer looking for a lift for, he doesn't want us to do anything for him, but he keeps calling saying, well, now I've decided I want to get a little, maybe a cable company boom truck. A little boom can get me up in my tractor. They said, oh, jeez. He's on the path looking for a little boom truck that he thinks that's going to do his stuff. A lot of people looking for lifts.
Yes. Affordable lifts.
Affordable lifts, yes, yeah.
That's the key word in that.
Yes.
I think to find an affordable one you could put in the back of a pickup truck that you can get to various equipment is certainly what a lot of people have asked about.
And that's what our senior design students were working on last year, and they actually left the semester at the end of the school year thinking they were quite successful, and I had to burst their bubble. And one of the students was halfway through his senior year, so he's got another semester to go, and he's already starting to pick some students to be on his team this year, and I hope in 2 years' time we can be successful.
That would be good.
Yes.
It's $45,000 to $60,000 is pretty to swallow for
yes.
a lot of people. Well, it's it would be nice to find an affordable way to do that in a truck.
Yes, and then when you were we have one paraplegic that did buy himself an old telephone truck, and that's his plan. But
oh, is he? Okay.
Pardon me?
Oh, yeah. I'm just wondering how they get up and transfer their wheelchairs into the boom. Or are they looking at putting their wheelchair in the boom itself? Or what? I'm not.
They're basically planning on replacing the bucket with a chair, not a wheelchair
okay.
necessarily, but just a chair with a belt.
Like
even to get into the, you know, I had him even trying to show me how he was going to transfer into his truck, into this truck to drive it to the field. And he's going to lose his shoulders in no time because of the way he always is, you know, he's in his, oh gosh, I think he's 32 and he's young and invincible. Right now he's had a very tough summer because he was doing some welding and didn't realize that his pants were heating and they caught on fire, and he had very bad burns and is going through skin grafts now. But he seems to have to learn the hard way on everything. But one that we're trying to make the lift for, he's an obese gentleman who is right now his brother picks him up in the bucket of the tractor and gets him fairly close, and it's sort of a leap of faith to get onto the tractor and back off. So and they're not the only two that are in the United States that are doing this kind of thing. But
no,
agility lift is $55,000, and even Life Essentials is high 30s, approaching 40 the last I knew, and those just aren't numbers we can realistically work with.
Right.
In Vermont, the VR funding is extremely limited, and they basically cap it at $2,000 per case.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
And, you know, what farmer can afford the balance? You know, and they certainly don't need another loan.
$2,000, boy, that's...
Yeah, I know. When I went to this, when I began with AgriAbility, I went to Wisconsin for training, and they were saying that they averaged over, each VR case averaged over $40,000, and I'll tell you, my jaw just dropped, and I don't understand how other states, supposedly it's on a per capita basis, and I can't believe that Vermont has any higher per capita need for VR services, but yeah, that's what it's, and last year with funding cuts, basically about the 1st of June, they cut everybody off and there was nothing available for a month.
Wow. Yeah, we in Minnesota, we've got some of the individuals I've worked with going through VR to get some things. We've $25,000-$30,000 by the time you're finished. It's,
right. Well, I know that I can't even make recommendations for so many pieces of equipment because it's just not economically feasible.
Wow.
And we, technically in Vermont, we do have an AT reuse thing like everybody else, but I will tell you it doesn't work. And in Vermont it doesn't work, and some money and effort needs to be invested there. When I was just drooling listening to this Kansas program and how well it's working. And you know, it's one of those things, I'm sure that if they could put the dollars into it, it'll come back many fold to them.
Right.
But getting that idea passed and to some of these closed minds
Well, there is so much assistive technology sitting around the country in boxes that have been purchased and never used, and abandoned and stuff. But boy, it'd be nice to have a big truck and be able to pick all that stuff up and get it back out in use. But there's a lot of stuff just sitting that certainly could be used by people. And that's, how do you get that to people?
Right.
Yeah. Kansas sounds
and
good.
Then, oh, sorry, but, you know, and it's really sad that Kansas isn't, the VR system isn't willing to open their borders. You know, and I assume every state would have that same attitude, but it really needs to be on a national basis, not a state-by-state basis.
So the more I talk to different individuals, the more I find that, yes, VR has an overall policy nationwide, but within the state, very, very much different.
Right. And this reuse, I mean, the money for VR, or the bulk of the money for VR is federal funds.
Yep.
And so it shouldn't be, this reuse really should be nationwide. And then get everything, you know, and how do you even begin to get an inventory of what's out there? Nobody knows what's out there.
No.
I know with Indiana what the Tech Act project, the dollars for it comes through Voc Rehab.
Yes.
And 80% of the dollars are federal, 20% state.
Right.
And
standard.
There's some states that are having trouble with that 20%.
Right.
And I think that's where you're running into the limitations on it.
Well, yeah. But that, my understanding is that that's been a long time, that the 1,500 to 2,000 max, and they prefer that it be 1,500 and under, that's been in place a long time. Unfortunate, even like vehicle mods, your name goes on a list and it could be years.
Oh, wow.
If there's another pocket of money or another, that's a different classification, and they only do so many a year.
Not good.
It isn't.
There, have you looked at the Tech Act projects with their alternative finance program?
You mean the low interest loans?
Yeah, it's a low interest loan.
Right.
Yeah.
there aren't many farmers that I know of that are interested in another loan.
Right.
We've been successful with some of that.
I have in one or two cases, but most of them, you know, their eyes kind of glaze over. And, you know, they've just, especially if it's some kind of a catastrophic thing and it's kind of new to them, they're not ready for that yet.
Right, right.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
So what, let me ask you this then, what are you using as to gather funds to do some of the work?
Basically, we try to keep the cost very much down. Our partner, our nonprofit partner is Vermont Center for Independent Living. They have one fund that they've been quite helpful with. And they oftentimes will match what I can get from VR and have, even in one instance, gone up to $5,000.
Okay.
Right now, that is, they've spent all their money for this year, and so we're just kind of amassing our, you know, in our application for that, and holding off until they have funds available again. But that's a yearly game we play.
So what is their fiscal year then?
Actually, this is October. The apps will open again.
Okay. Because I know our VR year is July 1 to June 30.
Oh, the VR year is, yes, here as well. No, this is with VCIL.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that'd be pretty hard to do very much with $1,500. A lot of the stuff that we worked with.
Definitely. Yeah. Sometimes it just feels like a Band-Aid.
Yeah. And a small Band-Aid at that.
Yes.
Absolutely a small one, yeah.
Yeah.
Funding's an issue for everyone.
Oh, yeah. Which then that, you know, I use Life Essentials a lot, part of because they're close and part of because of safety and so forth.
Yeah, we can't even.
But that's also, I do that through VR.
Right.
If they don't have a funding source, then, you know, we're looking at homemade stuff also. Especially the platform lifts.
Right.
And the hitches are starting to increase in price, and some of the quick hitches are made. You said Tommy John with me. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's just that the price of steel is really skyrocketed and seems to be staying there. I think that's part of it.
Right. Well, with the economy, everything's going into, people are pulling money out of stocks and going into commodities. And
yes.
One of those. Any other questions, comments? We've got our hour, and...
Yep. Well, thank you. This is very interesting. I think I'm going to be bending a few ears in the VR system about this reuse. It needs to be much more efficient than it is in Vermont.
Reuse is huge. We certainly will be talking about that for a long time to come.
Yeah. Well, our next call is going to be October 20th. 3 o'clock Eastern time. Sandra Stevenson's going to be presenting, and she has gone through RESNA certification, and she's going to talk about her experiences, and then the next one will be we'll be meeting during the National Training Workshop in November.
Yeah.
And
how many ATPs do we have in our group, Stephen?
The ones I'm aware of were probably half dozen of us, maybe.
Okay.
So, well, if there aren't any other questions or comments, we'll let you go, and we will talk to you again. Couple months, or if you'd like to address, let me know, and we'll call emergency.
One question. I just haven't think of it. It comes to me every now and then, but I am designing quite a lot of steps for older tractors, additional steps, and hand clutches and that kind of thing, and every now and then I kind of think, liability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You say you're questioning your ability?
I'm not questioning my ability, and I don't know if the, like a good faith thing would come into it. I believe I'm always considering the safety and usability, but I don't know how I am covered liability wise.
Yeah. Well, I know we've talked about that at some previous workshops. That might be an issue that we need to address again. You know, with the turnover of staff we're seeing, that might be something to address again.
Right.
That'll be a good one, yes.
Because I know the folks that we have working with us, I make it a point to tell them that let me do the formal assessments because of liability coverage that I have here with the university.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, so.
Right.
Anymore, you gotta be careful.
Right. All right, well, I just thought I'd mention it.
Sure. You did a good job on the steps on the one that you put up on the blog.
Oh, thank you. It's a do the designs and working with the fabricator is the most fun I have in the job. I really enjoy it.
Yep. Getting out on the farm is mine.
Well, that too. It's just the whole process of that is it's. I really enjoy it.
Yep.
And thank
well,
you.
We will shut this down, and I thank you very Thanks. Much for being on with us, and
Talk
we
to
will
next.
See you later.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank
Have
you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.